Hello, listeners, and welcome to this month's edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. This is a monthly podcast where myself, Emma Burnell, political journalist, consultant and playwright, discusses a piece of popular culture that covers politics in one way or another with my esteemed friend and colleague on this podcast, Professor Stephen Fielding. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Emma. That's an impressive series of things that you are now. I've got envy now. I've got to come up with more things that I am. But anyway, hello. How are you?
You have one job that actually pays, though. I have three that don't.
All right. I'll trade. Right. I'm happy to trade that.
Steve, I mean, very topically, given what we're about to discuss, you are a professor. Have you been on strike?
I always vote to strike, whatever the issue, as a matter of principle. But this one, more particularly than every other strike, because basically we're being screwed over by our pensions, our income, and those wanting to enter the profession are being, you know, treated quite badly, because, you know, most contracts are really only on a temporary part-time basis. So there was more issues to throw a stick at, you know. It was a ridiculous, overdetermined strike, really. So we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. Obviously, yeah. Have my solidarity, and I'm sure the solidarity of most of our listeners.
All one listener.
Well, I say most of our listeners. That listener is obviously in two minds, but 80% of them support you.
Yes. Thank you, listener. Thank you.
So this month we have watched GBH, the 1990, I believe.
Was it 1991.
Yes. 7-part drama by Alan Bleasdale, which is set in a fictional northern town, filmed in Manchester. Everyone in it, bizarrely, has a Liverpool accent. It's quite clearly a fictionalised Liverpool, and it's around a left-wing council leader and his, in the first episode, he calls for a general strike, and his relationships with a militant group, with the state, with the city he runs, and also his interpersonal issues and relationships. And he's set up against a head teacher of a special needs school who does not break a picket line, but is accused of doing so because there was no picket line for him to cross, so he just went to work. and that's the setup of the drama. That's the first episode, where you have the Robert Lindsay character of Michael Murray, who is, you know, very much this charismatic, suited and booted council leader, which when I looked this up, everybody says is based on Derek Hatton. And Derek Hatton is quoted as saying, the only person who claims this isn't based on me now is Alan Bleasdale. and then his alternative voice, which is Jim
Nelson,
thank you, played by Michael Palin, who is the sort of the woolly liberal. They're both Labour, but they're the two sides of the Labour Party. Would that be a fair summary of the basis of the drama, Steve?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it seemed to be a kind of his rendition of militants' reign in Liverpool in the 1980s, which, of course, by 1991 is in the recent past, and that got a lot of attention. And as you say, you know, people like Derek Hatton, who wasn't averse to self publicity to start with, drew what they considered to be very obvious parallels. And, you know, to an extent, there are parallels. There are clear parallels, but it's about more general things than about militants in Liverpool. So the character of Michael Murray, who is not Derek Hatton. He's got so many different things about him, and most particularly is that while it starts off being, oh, this is like militant in Liverpool, it actually turns into a conspiracy drama in which the militant, like Trotskyist group, which is using Michael Murray in a way that Derek Hatton wasn't used. Derek Hatton was a militant. He was, you know, the leading light of militant. He wasn't being used by militant. This unnamed Trotskyist organization is itself being used by the intelligence services to deliberately foment division within the Labour Party so it could maintain a Conservative government, right? So it starts off, and it confused. I mean, I when I wrote my brilliant book, State of Play, I had to watch this in 2013 because it was clearly something you needed to talk about if you want to talk about politics and drama. When I looked through all the reviews, Gary Bushell, who a far right figure in his own right, I think it'd be fair to say that, lawyers, was a TV critic of The Sun, amazingly enough, a very right-wing figure who then read the TV shows through that prism. He saw the first episode of it and said, this is great. You know, it's exposing the left-wing lunatics and the violence and the blah, blah, blah of militants 1980s reign, and therefore, you know, he used it as a way to attack the Labour Party. But by the end, he was attacking it because it was just yet another example of loony left conspiracism, blah, blah, blah. So it starts off in one way and then it ends on a rather different note. And I think most people, when they think of GBH, think of, because the first episode is 90 minutes. I wonder how many people ever got beyond that. But the first episode, which is the Jim Nelson set up against Michael Murray, and he does break the strike, but he doesn't break the strike because there weren't no pickets to cross. And then Michael Murray tries to make sure that the strike is 100%, and he sends in his goons, and they're banging the roof of it, the special needs school, and the kids are screaming, and it's a very, you know, it's very emotive. I mean, it's really over the top. You know, these grown men threatening these kids and they're all screaming. I think that's what they remember. I think that's what a lot of people remember, or that's what the cultural memory of GBH is. But it's actually, it's much more than that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would say GBH sags in the middle a bit. I enjoyed it more than you. I and your face when I said that, I think you think it sags from start to finish. Essentially, there are moments of interesting drama, and there were, what I thought was interesting were some of the debates in it, and are very relevant to today. The how to be Labour argument was quite interesting for me. What I found fascinating is that if you were to blindfold somebody and get them just to listen to the final episode of what Michael Murray and his people are accused of being, and what Jim Nelson is saying that he is, you would expect them to be dressed in the opposite clothes. Because what fascinated me about Michael Murray is that he presents as Tony Blair and sounds like, and he's got all of that sort of Mandelsonian presentation skills at the beginning, and you know, when he comes and talks about the strike, he's really holding a room, he's really charismatic, and he's dressed in a sharp suit, for 91, obviously it's massive, because that's what the weird fashion was then, but he is all of the things that the New Labour presentation, the gloss of New Labour, was, he has that element, and Jim Nelson is scruffy and, doesn't dress up. But the core of that pluralism of ideas that he fights for and makes, and we're going to listen later to a clip of him making a speech about, would be considered far more centrist. Now, Michael Murray doesn't really make many political arguments. That would be one of my biggest critiques of this, is there isn't a, this is the left-wing argument, this is the centrist argument, let's fight them out. What you've got is this is muscular socialism with the emphasis on the muscular, this is liberal socialism with the emphasis on the liberal.
Yeah. I mean, he dresses sharp. I mean, Murray dresses sharply. I mean, that's one thing he's probably got in common with Derek Hatton. Derek Hatton dressed sharply, was very well presented, and within its own sort of rabble-rousing sort of limits, he was quite effective, you know, from the little bits I've seen of him shouting at crowds. They seem to have, you know, like what he was saying. But it's a completely unfair kind of debate. If GBH is a debate between a certain kind of Labour and another certain kind of Labour, I mean, Jim Nelson, who basically, Michael Palin is playing Michael Palin. If you know, we should forget.
And who doesn't love Michael Palin, right?
Jim Nelson is Michael Palin, and Michael Palin is Jim Nelson. And from what I've read from his diaries, I mean, it sort of broadly reflects who he really is, as kind of woolly, decent, you know, nice man. And he is the voice of reasonable socialism within the Labour Party. And everything is, I mean, he gets the chance to say, and we will hear it in a minute, he gets his chance to talk about decency and what he represents. Whereas Michael Murray's kind of more militant socialism, the way that Bleasdale depicts it is ridiculous. Yeah. It relies on thugs, pickets, you know, violence, shouting, and you know, there is clearly there have been elements of that, and certainly in the militant period in Liverpool. But to see that it's on the one hand the kind of Michael Palin version of the Labour Party and the sort of Michael Murray, it's a one-sided competition in the whole thing, and it's, you know, if I was a Corbynite, for example, I'd be quite angry and say this is distorting everything about what we stand for, and is deeply unfair. But you know, that's maybe we should listen to the clip.
Yeah, let's have a listen to the clip of Jim Nelson's vision of what socialism is. He's fighting for. They are trying to expel him. This is a ward meeting at which they are discussing his expulsion for bringing the Labour Party into disrepute. And a lot of Michael Murray supporters have turned up, and it looked at first as if they were going to muscle the room, but then he was able to bring his own supporters, which were the local farming socialists.
Yeah, we can talk about that after the clip and the bizarre nature of that, but yeah.
But it was thanks to their presence in the room that he's able to make this speech.
I'll wait to hear what Mr. Nelson has to say.
Mr. Nelson doesn't have to say anything now.
Oh, I don't know. I might ask you all to consider how wonderful it is that I can hear myself speak, that I'm free to talk without you beating me black and blue, which is what you really want to do. And I'm only free to do so because someone else will beat you black and blue if you do. Now, I'm glad of that. Pleased that my friends, some of whom I hardly knew I had, came to my rescue. But I hate violence. I do. I hate it so much, whenever I see any, I have to join in. I take after my father for that. I do. He was a hard man, harder than me, but he never touched me. One look from him, I was in hiding. My dad had no need to hit me, had my respect, had my love. Never touched me. He was not a political man, my dad, or he bought the Daily Herald, voted Labour. But he was never anyone's disciple. He did not believe in messiahs. I can see I'm not impressing you. Do you mind me talking down to you like this? You don't like being talked down to, do you? I don't know why. I could never talk up to you in a million years. But I'll come down to you if you want. Is that any better? Not that I expect that anything I can say to you will make any difference to you. I'm no missionary. I met a missionary once. He said it was an interesting position. But I'm not talking to you, boys. Tonight I'm talking for me. and for all the people like me here tonight. For my father, too. For all those of us who refuse to learn about life from manifestos and Marx and Das Kapital. Because that's your problem, some of you boys, isn't it? You've only read one book. You must have read that book and thought, right, that'll do for me, that's the book for me. I know about life now. Why not read two books? Read three. Get a rounded view of life instead of the flat earth version. You may come to the same conclusions you did from reading that one book. But is there any harm in knowing other things? Anyway, I don't care about you. I'd like to, I know I should, because you should never dismiss anyone. But you're only the puppets. And it's the puppet master I really want to examine. Because here we all are, living under the most reactionary, democratically elected government we've ever known, in a Labour-controlled city where all animals are equal, but some councillors are more equal than others, where too often lions are led by donkey jackets, living proof that the further left you go, the more right-wing you become. We have to behave with dignity and with honour, and above all, without corruption. Two wrongs do not make a right or a left, especially not a left. Socialism is the redistribution not only of wealth, but of care and concern and equality and decency and belief in humankind. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even expect to be able to say any of this tonight. But I suppose all I'm trying to remind everyone, myself included, is that in the short time that we all have, we would want to be remembered for the good that we have done. Wouldn't we? Of course we would. That's right, isn't it, boys?
There you go. So I mean, it sounds lovely, but I don't think it is, as you say, a counter-argument, because Murray never gets to make the argument as to why. And the closest we get is the work, because as you say, the militant group turn out to be three quarters actual state interventionists. And it's only really the dreamy academic guy who's actually militant at all. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But can we talk about how the Labour Party is depicted in this in terms of that meeting? Because to underline, I mean, there's something weird going on as well in Bleasdale's presentation of all of this, because the militant group or whatever it is and Michael Murray, they're centred in the city, or the unnamed city, right? And, you know, there's lots of black people and there's quite a lot of race politics, which is kind of interesting. But it's a centre of trouble and violence and thuggery and all bad things, right? And then he kind of situates Michael Palin in a Labour Party on the rural fringes of whatever this city is. And to the extent, you know, he's living in this nice little country cottage and all of the people, I mean, what all of his followers are, you know, like you say, farmers, farm labourers, agricultural types, you know, and there's something really kind of concerning about how Bleasdale is doing this. I mean, there's a poem by William Cowper, not a poet that, or he's a romantic poet, but the line is that he's most well known for is that God created the country, man the town, right? So, and what Bleasdale seems to be, either whether he's aware of it or not, because I don't think he's a very clever writer. I don't know. Yeah, he's saying there's something noble and natural and perfect and superior to this Michael Palin socialism, which is countrified, right? And then, and you know, in the end of the show, it's all up in flames, you know, anarchy, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, racial violence going on. And it's kind of that juxtaposition that I think is very troubling in terms of how he sees things. I mean, apart from the fact that he presents a ward Labour Party which is debating the expulsion of Michael Palin, and then all these people are turning up who are not members of the ward party, and it's turning into some kind of, you know, Nuremberg rally, and it's odd. It's really odd how bad he gets that. But it's more that distinction that he's kind of subconsciously drawing about the unnaturalness of a certain kind of politics and the naturalness of another, which is just completely bogus.
Well, and I think also there's this, it's very much a drama about knowing your place. You know, Michael Murray clearly has risen above his station. It sends him mad. And the depiction, I mean, there are lots of things in Michael Murray map, and the depiction of mental health issues, both in his and Michael Palin's, are very, very dodgy.
Yes.
And you would not get away with those these days at all, and quite rightly so. But, you know, quite clearly, Michael Murray has to be humiliated for rising above his station, whereas Michael Palin's lovely middle-class Labour has to win.
And all those farmers and whatever, they defer to Michael Palin, don't they? They look up to him,
yeah,
don't they? Yes.
And what's, I mean, it's quite funny that half of militants are actually posh, pretending to be common, because, yeah, that happens a lot. Mm. But actually, usually it happens because the posh people have become deeply well-meaning socialists, and then they can afford to take it in a militant direction. Mm. They're not doing it because they're actually right-wing elements of the state.
Yeah, I mean, the mental illness thing is, like you say, so you got these two, it's because it's about these two men, and I guess they're meant to represent two sides of the debate. I mean, they don't really, because Bleasdale is so far, you know, on Michael Palin's side, it's not true. Both of them have got elements of mental illness, and both of them are often played for laughs. I mean, it's just in ways that you just think, really? I mean, because that's the other thing about Bleasdale. It's not just about this. He does, and GBH is described as a comedy drama. And it's the way that he switches from comedy to drama and back again, I find, you know, very jarring. I mean, it's not clever. He does comedy and then he does drama. Oh, and then there's some comedy. So, I mean, I think it only really worked when Michael Murray is kind of losing his mind. Again, this is played for laughs. And in the hotel where he's staying, there's a Doctor Who conference. And it's that. Now, that is genuinely funny. That is genuinely funny with all these different doctors.
The thing where he tries to beat up a Dalek is really funny. Come on, that was brilliant.
No, I'm saying that was about the one time it kind of was actually, I thought it was really funny. But it's about these two men who are have got mental issues. And with Murray, he's got father issues. Mm. And it just, because when you're trying to explain why, because he seems to be, it started off he was an electrician, wasn't he? So he started, you know, and his father died before he was born. So, and his father was this big activist, labor activist, Irish labor activist, who was self-sacrificing and probably died because he was so looking after the interests of all of the people, you know, in his union, whatever. So he's a fatherless child who then constantly says, I'm without a father. I don't have a father. And you, so there's something going on with Michael Murray there, which is never properly explained. And then at the end, Michael Murray, because there are these parallels between the two characters in some way. Then in the end, Michael Murray, who's starting to realise that he's been taken for a ride, that is, you know, there is some kind of redemption for him at the end, that he then looks at Michael Palin, and basically he wishes he was him. You know, that there's something he recognizes. I think he says, he's me, you know, because Bleasdale's not subtle. When he wants us to know something, he says it, he gets a character to say it. So there's something kind of interesting, but it's cack-handed. It's really cod Freud, and it's very, you know, dubious. But there's something going on there beyond the militant sort of thing and Derek Hatton. But treatment of women? You're the feminist.
Yeah, no, the women in it are ridiculous. What was quite fun was seeing a very young Anna Friel and young Jane Danson. So two of our future soap queens popping up in it.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, women were femme fatales from age five, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
So Eileen Critchley, played by the future Leanne Battersby, is a troubled young girl who basically gets Michael Murray as a young boy to strangle her, not to death, but to wounding, entirely out of her own volition. You know, she wants this.
Yeah, she manipulates him.
And then, so she manipulates him. He's entirely in awe of his mother, who is probably one of the strongest women in it, her and Michael Palin's wife, but both of whom are kind of strong women without their own sense of character. They're there to be strong women in the lives of these much more interesting and complex men. Other than that, there's a lecturer who looks like he's straight out of Brookside, but still seems to get his end away all over the place.
Oh, Michael Angelis.
Yes.
Who has to appear in everything that Bleasdale writes. I think, going a bit beyond just the women, some of the secondary characters, they're just pointless.
Listener,
this goes on for 9.5 hours, right? 9.5 hours. That's nearly 5 FA Cup finals. I don't know why I mentioned that, but
watch this than 5 FA Cup finals.
Some of it. I mean, it could have done with substantial editing, and that would have taken out quite a few of these pointless secondary characters, like Michael Murray's brother. What's the point of that, right? The Randy poet. What's the point of that? And there's a hotelier, and that's just like, what? Why do they go to a hotel? Why are they in a hotel for about 3 episodes, right? And what's the point of all these planes going over the hotel? So there's lots of touches in it, and you're just scratching your head saying, I was asking, WTF, you know? So it's got about, is it 7 episodes? Some of them are
7 episodes. Some of them are 90 minutes.
Yeah. And it could have done with a very, you know, taking out about half. I mean, maybe that's a bit harsh, but taking out quite a few. And it would have been much better.
I liked it overall much more than you did. Definitely needed, to be a 4 episodes, 4-hour long. It could have done that, and it could have told a more interesting story. I would have taken out all of the mental health issue aspect of it, because I don't think it actually helped the drama. I think it hindered it. And also, if what you want to ask is a question about political corruption, socialism, does socialism corrupt? Is working class versus middle class socialism? All of that could have been done without the mental health aspects from both the middle class and working class characters. And it would have actually, you know, in many ways, it felt like almost like you were trying to kind of excuse it through mental health. And actually, I think that's a cop out. So it was both insulting to those with mental health issues and a cop out in terms of the drama.
Mm. I mean, I think it was just fatally flawed in terms of the politics of it. The hotelier, whose name I forget, I mean, he's just a cartoon character. I mean, he's just absolutely ridiculous as a character. But he gives vent when he's drunk. Michael Palin, there's a storm going on. Oh, there's a storm, therefore there must be something profound is about to be said. Oh, yes, there is. So there's a storm. And the hotelier basically outlines what I imagine is Bleasdale's view of it, because he called GBH something like a plea for common decency, you know, give me a break, right? And he kind of outlines, the hotel outlines, saying, talking to Michael Palin, who's, you know, 1991, he must be in his late 40s, 50s or something, and he says, you're generating, you know, you're people like you, middle class, who were loved, radical in the 60s, you know, and there's references to them going on protests. Mm. You were radical in the 60s, but the, you know, nice Guardian reading, liberal, lefties, middle class, blah, blah, blah. The 1980s weren't good for you, were they? And, you know, it, you know, with Thatcher, and then with the thing, the militant thing as well, that you people have just been left, and your world is being, you're being ignored, your world is collapsing. And I'm thinking, he sounds like someone talking now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, about, and I'm wondering, is this, are the liberal middle class permanently in a sense of being disenfranchised, of being, you know, squeezed by the far left and the right, the intelligence services, whatever forces happen to be? Because that's, as I say, that speech could have been delivered in some drama, and possibly has been at the National Theatre now. And so in a way, the series kind of expresses Bleasdale's view that nice, decent people are being squeezed and they have to stand up in some way. But there's the intelligence services and the right-wing press on one side, and the Tory government, and then the far left. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting, because I'd never really thought about this kind of constant whinging.
Yeah.
It's
essentially a centrist dad.
Yeah.
Pre-Twitter.
You've nailed it. Yes, I wish I'd got there sooner. No, that's exactly it. So it's a 9.5-hour series about a centrist dad.
There you go. Yeah. That's it. I think it's one of the formative texts. It's taken us this long to do it, because it's taken us this long to get Steve to watch it.
Yeah. I'm not getting those 9.5 hours back again. If I hadn't been on strike, I wouldn't have been able to watch it.
Well, there you go. Militancy has its place.
Yes, yes. Ironically enough.
But don't worry, it's Steve's choice next time, so I'm sure whatever we're watching. But I do think, if you're interested in how politics is portrayed in popular culture, you can't really avoid GBH. It's such a seminal text.
I think a deeply flawed but seminal text, and should be viewed, if only to then allow you to say to all the people that say, oh, it's about this. No, it's not actually. Well, it might be, but it's about lots of other things.
I think the mythology of GBH is quite significantly different from the reality. Mm-hmm. And as you say, very few people are actually going to sit through the whole thing in order to challenge that mythology.
No, they'll watch the first episode, which is 90 minutes, which is the bit that everybody who ever mentions it talks about, and that's what they think it is, and it isn't. And that's, yeah, but it's on More 4, isn't it? Not More 4, it's on the Channel 4 on demand thing. Yeah. So if you really want to do that over Christmas.
There you go, listeners. There's the sound of a man who's really making a recommendation he believes in.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, thank you as always, Steve. Very, very nice to talk to you. Even if I did make you watch 9.5 hours of a drama you didn't enjoy to do so.
You know, you always see different things in the text, don't you? But I wish I hadn't have to do that, though. That was it.
Well, it's your turn next, so you can exact your revenge. But that's it for us for this year, listeners. Thank you very much. We will be back in the new year. I think it's probably too late in December for us to do a Christmas special now.
I think so, yes. Unless there's a Mrs. Brown's Boys that I haven't watched yet.
Oh, come on. That's too much revenge.
Indeed.
Brilliant, lovely. Well, thank you ever so much, Steve. It just leaves me to say thank you to Lord Wood of Anfield, of the Liverpool, for our tune. Thank you to Physical Human Productions. And we will be back.
Goodbye.